Welcome back, folks. I have with me an absolutely great coach, Larry Holley. I wish I could have been his assistant for a few years because I think I would have learned a lot about how to do this thing right. Larry is in five different halls of fame, including the NAI Hall of Fame, which is fantastic. Won over 900 games. And as a gentleman, has always been known as a gentleman. So one of the questions I wanted to ask you, Larry, was, did you ever have any career regrets? And I think I know the answer, but any career regrets at all?
You know, I knew this question was coming, and I talked to my wife about it, and the answer is no. But I will say there, you know, there was a time at William Jewell that I had a chance to go somewhere else. I'm not going to say where it was because I kind of went up there in the darkness of night, and nobody knew I really talked to anybody about the job. But no, it's the toughest decision though was leaving Northwest Missouri and coming to William Jewell. I just became the head coach, was in the second year. We went 15-11, which was the first winning season there in a number of years. So I was very happy. We had a great recruiting year. And then all of a sudden, William Jewell enters the picture. Initially, I wasn't going to interview for the job. They didn't have full-time assistant, all that sort of thing. And so my wife and I made a list, Joe, of reasons to stay and reasons to leave. And some as important as the educational system, the health system, hospitals, some as minuscule as, well, Liberty has a McDonald's and Maryville does not. Back in the spring of 1979, and Maryville did not have a McDonald's. So we wrote down everything. There were 76 reasons total. And then we went down, okay, this one favors William Jewell, this one favors Northwest. We added them up, and guess what? 38 to stay, 38 to leave. True story. And the guy I'm communicating with, the vice president at William Jewell at the time, later became the president at Baker University, Dan Lambert, I called him. I was supposed to call him at 11 o'clock and give him an answer. And I called about, 10:45. I said, can I have another hour? And he said, yes. And I left the house and I walked the neighborhood in Maryville for an hour. Saw Jim Redd, who at the time was the head football coach. Later became the athletic director there and at William Jewell, and still a dear friend. And I came back in and took the job. And I will tell you that first year we went 10-19, Joe, and Northwest was pretty good. And we had to go back and play in the Northwest tournament. And the new coach first game was against Westminster in the Ryland Miller Classic. And we played Colorado School of Mines and lost. And Westminster upset Northwest Missouri State. We had a 19-game home court winning streak when I left. We were 15 at home my last year. So guess who we got to play for third place the next day? And that coach was mad and should have been, and his players were mad and should have been. And I think I used four timeouts in the first 8 minutes of that game. And we just got trounced by Northwest. So to say regrets, we struggled that first year, but I enjoyed it. I didn't recruit any of those guys. And John Hickman, his two best players had graduated, but I love those guys. And they did everything I asked them to do. But in terms of regrets, no. William Jewell got in my heart as a high school senior, and then really got in my heart during my 4 years here. I would tell our recruits, I said, if your experience at William Jewell is half as good as mine, you're in for the time of your life.
Yeah.
It's absolutely true. I'll get emotional talking about it. But Jewell was just a special place for me. And I tell this story, Homer Drew and I would ride back on road trips and dream about, talk about maybe someday we'll be a good high school coach, maybe have a chance to coach at William Jewell. And I got that dream. He got the dream at Valparaiso and at the national level, Division I. But the answer to that is no. I mean, again, did I have an opportunity or two? Sure. But William Jewell was in my heart, and it wasn't going anywhere. Much like you and St. Benedict's, Benedictine. I can't say, it's hard for me to say Benedictine. It's St. Benedict's.
Yeah.
You guys had such a role going there when you were there, and what you endeavored to do in coming back and trying to get that third national championship. You know, it was a different situation than when you were in Atchison playing for the Ravens. And so you know what it's like. And, you know, whether William Jewell can get to the level, the NCAA Division II level, as we did at the NAIA level, I don't know. But there's a terrific coach there in Chris McCabe, and they're working very hard to get that done.
We talked about your wife, your current wife, and then I know you had lost a wife earlier. And I always wondered, you know, number one, I always wondered, how does the wife react to the life that they have to live being a coach's wife? And then in your case, was there a difference between the two women in how they reacted? And then we'll be careful. I mean, we don't have to publicize this part of it, but
might have to edit this part a little bit. my first wife, I got married. I was 29 when I got married the first time.
You're an old man.
I was an old man. And, anyway, it was my last year at Central Methodist. She moved into my 12x51 mobile home, which I had lived in, that would have been my seventh year living that and, living in a single mobile home. Well, you have to understand, I coached 91 games my first year at Harrisburg High School. I had varsity JV junior high girls, varsity JV junior high boys. We practiced before school, during school, after school, Saturday mornings and Sunday afternoons. But I had watched my dad do that at that tiny school.
Wow.
And I did. I coached 91 games with no assistant coach. I thought I need to be close to the school. So I bought a 12x51 mobile home, parked it right across the street from the school, so I didn't have far to go. Had a great year that year, and then lucky enough to get the Central Methodist job. But anyway, I'm in my sixth year at Central Methodist. I'd gotten married. My wife had a job at Columbia, Missouri, and she was commuting. And then she went to school second semester to start her education hours and to become an elementary school teacher. And I get a call from Northwest Missouri State asking me to interview for the assistant's job. And we went up and took a look and obviously took the job. The good news for her is we moved into a double wide. We no longer had to live in that 12x51. So now we're in a double wide for 2 years. And then I got the head job at Northwest and I thought, well, probably ought to buy a home. So we bought a house. but we had three lovely daughters, and she did a lot of the raising, Joe. You know, at small colleges, it's in your book, and we've talked about this. There would be weeks at William Jewell where we would play Monday, Thursday, and Saturday. When do high schools play in the Kansas City area? They play Tuesdays
and Fridays.
Mm-hmm. And when do junior colleges play? They play Wednesdays and Saturdays. I had more than three or four times in my coaching career where I would be coaching a game on Monday, Thursday, Saturday, go to high school games on Tuesday, Friday, and go to a JUCO game on Wednesday. Where and so Sunday was, you know, and then, you know, you get up, go to church. I mean, she did a marvelous job raising our daughters. Now I'd get them up in the morning and help them make their bed, and I'd put them, if they were still awake when I got home, we'd say our prayers and all that sort of thing. And I was involved. I wasn't an absentee father, but she did most of the raising, and that's a great compliment to Ann. And sadly, she got something called ARDS, acute respiratory distress syndrome, and passed away in 2006. But one of her best friends, I always say she continued to take care of me. One of her best friends introduced me to my wife, Linda, a retired school teacher. And she had been a cheerleader in high school following, you know, the basketball team. And she even cheered at a tournament at William Jewell when she was in high school. They had a high school tournament at Brown Gymnasium, which you didn't have very many nice things to say about Brown Gym in your book. But it was pretty good home court advantage. Not quite as good as the one, the Raven's Nest and all that sort of, the pit and all that. But anyway, she went to every home game, and she'd have the three daughters dressed to the nines, and she would go to all the local games. One of the things about the Heart, you know this as well as I, we had six opponents, if you include Park and Rockhurst, on our schedule. But with Avila, Mid-America, Baker, and Benedictine, we ate our pregame meal for those road games in our cafeteria.
Yeah.
Get it in our cafeteria, get in the two vans and drive.
Yeah.
So went to all those games, but she didn't go to all the other road games. Linda, on the other hand, her family's grown. She's retired. She went on every trip. She traveled to Louisville. She traveled to Indianapolis. Wow. She traveled to St. Louis and Springfield and all the schools in our league and any other big trips that we took in Florida or wherever. But she was a cheerleader, so she's been around athletics. And, she's until she hurt her knees, a terrific tennis player. She was a skier. She's got medals for downhill skiing for her age group. So she was a very good athlete and very supportive. Both of them, loved our players. Obviously, as my daughters grew up, we'd have players over and this and that. And it was a good family atmosphere. But Linda would get involved. She helped put together a picture calendar for our basketball team every 2 years. And, with the help of her daughter, and as I mentioned earlier, she had taught photography. She was an art teacher. I think the good Lord thought I needed some of that culture in my life. I had been to the Nelson Art Gallery, but, I couldn't tell you the difference between all the different types of paintings. She tried to teach that to me, but I've outkicked my coverage twice. I'm blessed. She had two daughters, four granddaughters, and one great-granddaughter. I have three daughters, three granddaughters, and one grandson. So women have had a great influence on me, from my mom, wives, to my daughters, to my granddaughters. But it's been a great life. I've been very blessed, and I couldn't have picked two better people to spend my life with.
That's terrific. I wanted to just, when you get out of coaching, I kind of went through a withdrawal, and you may have also. What are you doing now to stay close to the game?
Well, I was just getting used to being retired when all this COVID stuff hit. And I think maybe I'm glad I'm not coaching now. All the things those guys have to go through, and you go on a road trip and the game's canceled once you get there. You know, our team at McKendree this year. But with the COVID, nobody's allowed. I would go to, well, let me back up. My first year out, I didn't want to be a distraction. So I didn't go to any of the early practices. Obviously, all the returning guys had played for me, and I had helped recruit two or three of the new guys. Mm-hmm. I did go up to a practice, and Coach McCabe welcomed me, and the team did, and I just didn't want it to be a distraction. But I did start going to games, but I sat as far away from the team as possible. I didn't sit behind them or on the baseline or across. I sat across from the visiting team and tried to be inconspicuous, just sitting up there and enjoying the game. And mm-hmm. So I go to the games. But this year, there's no spectators, only the players, the coaches, the referees, the essential personnel, your timer, your scorer, your filmer, your statistician. And so I talked to our women's coach, who's my best friend, and I said, I'd be willing to do some color work, make some comments if I could be on the webcast, and it would at least get me in the gym where I could watch the games. Mm-hmm. So this year, I have been, for lack of a better term, the color guy for all the home games for men's and women's basketball, and really enjoyed it, and hope I added a little bit to it. But I had a scary moment last Saturday. So I usually get there about an hour or a little more before the game. Well, I was running a little late, so I get there about 45 minutes before the game. And the SID comes up to me and says, Coach, our play-by-play guy, can't be here.
Oh no.
He's not here. Well, what about the student? Because this has happened a couple other times, but a student would fill in. Mm-hmm. Well, the student's under quarantine with the football team. COVID. So panic, I was probably more nervous last Saturday trying to do play by play and color than I ever was coaching a basketball. There's exceptions to that. So here I am, and I can do decent play-by-play because I know the Jewel players, but I hadn't spent any time memorizing the names of the Truman State players. And bless their hearts, I was wanting to say number 10 passes to number 40, number 40. But it's you know, they can watch the game. But so I've done that. And then I've been writing a book, as you are well aware.
Yeah.
That's taken quite a bit of time. And then I've been organizing Zoom calls. And that's really been a blessing. One of my best experiences at William Jewell was being in the Lambda Chi fraternity. And some fraternity brothers and I have been doing Zoom calls since July, once a month. And so I learned how to do that and host one. And so I've done them with some of the former teams I played on at Jewell and then the former teams I coached at Jewell. And it's just fun to get those guys and let them interact. And I just sit back and I just enjoy them reacquainting themselves with each other. And I'm going to have another one, a new group from the 65 team I played on back in the day that Homer Drew, that a lot of people know, was on that team.
I think that's terrific. I've got two other questions and I'm going to let you go. First one is, and I talk about this. In fact, I have a whole chapter in my book about this. It talks about why men especially, but now I think there's a lot of women too. Why do they want to be coaches? Is there anything that you can put your finger on as why somebody'd want to be a coach?
Well, you know, I know I've had a number of players. I think I have on my coaching tree through Jewell, maybe about 87 either assistants or former players that have gone into coaching.
Wow. And,
that some of that may be my fault. Some of them coach for a while and get out of coaching. I think anyone who's been an athlete at some point in time during their athletic career has probably thought about coaching. Now, maybe not seriously, but have probably thought about it. I don't know that I can answer that question for everybody, but, you know, if you're sitting in the bleachers, you know, everybody's got an opinion. If you listen to 810 or 610 sports talk, everybody's got an opinion. Everybody's a coach. And as I mentioned earlier, my dad didn't want me to do it because, you know, of all the criticism that you get. But one of the things that I used to, this on a side note, one of the things I used to tell my players jokingly, I said, you know, before you were ever allowed to play college basketball, you know what you should have to do? You should have to spend a year officiating basketball games and listen to the coaches and the fans and the players gripe about every other call you make. And then you ought to have to spend another year coaching youth basketball and listen to the parents and the players and the coaches gripe about, you know, why are you not playing my son more? Why are you not running this offense or defense? And truthfully, I think if people did that, nobody would go into coaching if they had to do each of those for a year. But I think it's just natural. A lot of people are good at working with people. It's something that I just clearly wanted to do, even though I would hear at the kitchen table on occasion a coach getting fired because he didn't play the right players or they get upset, or maybe he's doing something he shouldn't, you know.
Yeah.
And maybe a morals thing, but I think it's natural for a lot of people who are athletic and feel that they can do this job. Some of the very best coaches were not always the star players. You know, they were guys that maybe set the bench and watched it. And I will say two of the best things that happened to me in becoming a coach, and especially a college coach, Or the year and a half I spent on the bench as a non-starter. Now, I played enough to letter. I was a key player, played a little bit as a freshman, key guy off the bench first semester of my sophomore year. One of the best things that ever happened to me was sitting the bench for a year and a half. Because if you've never sat there, you don't know what it's like to sit there. And at the college level, every one of your teams, probably every player on your 12-man roster was a starter in high school. Probably half of them, or maybe most of them, were the star of the team. And all of a sudden, you've got a 12-person roster, 12-man roster, and you got seven guys doing something they've never done, is sitting there, especially those coming directly out of high school that have never set the bench. that was good for me, because you're sitting there and you want your team to win, but maybe in the back of your mind, well, maybe he'll twist an ankle here, or maybe he'll get his second foul and I'll get a chance. Can't that coach see that I'm better than that guy that's out there anyway? I've been proving it every day in practice. And then the other thing that I think really helped me, Joe, was being an assistant coach. I had been the coach at Harrisburg High School of six teams with no assistant. I'd been immediately became the head coach at Central Methodist for 6 years. And then I go to Northwest and I'm an assistant. And you know what? I'm sitting there and I was so much more relaxed, and suggestions instead of decisions. Mm-hmm. I saw the game so much clearer in those years. It's amazing. Yeah. Because there wasn't on me to make that decision or to make that adjustment. But I felt really good to recommend that to the coach, and Bob Eichelhart was great in letting me do that and encourage me to do that. So from my perspective, the year and a half I spent on the, because I'd been a starter all 4 years in high school, and you know, I'd never been an assistant coach, but those two things really helped me. But for everybody else, I think it's human nature for somebody that's a good athlete, maybe wants to try his hand at coaching. Obviously everybody doesn't feel that way, but you know, and a lot of times those guys are pretty good players.
Yeah. Last question I have before, I do want to talk to you about the book you're planning to write. Before we get into that, do you have any career advice that you'd like to give to the younger coaches that may be watching this?
Well, you hit on this in your book. You get a chance to volunteer to be a coach. You know, if at the college level, you'd be surprised how many small colleges don't have full-time assistants, like at William Jewell for my first 37 years, didn't have a full-time assistant, but maybe volunteer at the high school level or junior high level, or, you know, just to see if it's something you would like to do, but volunteer. And in some cases, there might be some minimal pay involved, but not something that's going to probably support you where you quit your full-time job. Go to clinics and see if that's something you'd like to do. Greater Kansas City Basketball Coach Association puts on some great coaching clinics. That's diminished this year with COVID, obviously. But you can go listen to people. I would encourage you to maybe go, if your regular job allows you to do this, go to a high school practice or go to a college practice and watch how that coach works and see if that's something you think you could be in charge of. I remember the first time that I was a head coach, I'm at Harrisburg, and I'm thinking, how do I teach the VK? I mean, I had never been in that situation. I go straight from William Jewell playing for 4 years to graduate school to head coach at Harrisburg. Now I'm coaching six teams, and there's kids that have never, at the junior high level, who have never shot a layup. And I'm thinking, okay, fun. I can demonstrate, but how do I break it down for them?
Yeah.
And I, looking back on it, if I have a regret, I probably would go back and be an assistant somewhere. Mm-hmm. In years, certainly at the college level, to be around somebody that would be a mentor to me, that I could see how it's done. Yeah. Because I was watching video, whatever was available back then. I was reading books. I was going to coaching clinics. And a lot of times at coaching clinics, those guys up there talking about their state championship team, they're not talking to me. I remember going to a coaching clinic. Walt Shublin used to put on Clinic of Champions, and everybody that was in his clinic had won a state championship the year before. And this one coach was going to talk about a 1-3-1 offense, and I thought, that's something I want to put in. So I go up there, and the guy, this is honest, good, and true. I'm simplifying this a little bit, but he put up a 1-3-1 offense, and the point guard would pass it to the wing and then pass it to the low post guy, and he would turn and score. I'm writing all that down. Second play, pass it to the wing. The wing passes it to the high post. High post passes it to the low post. Turns and scores. I mean, he had three or four plays like that. And then he explains that his front line is 6'10 and 6'6 and 6'5, and two of them assigned Division I. He wasn't talking to anybody in that room, except maybe the other people on the clinic staff. He sure wasn't talking to me. So sometimes you have to watch watch and listen. But there are always things at clinics, watching videos. The other area is working summer basketball camps. I will tell you honestly, I had never run a basketball camp until I was at Central Methodist, and Bob Venata, Gary Filbert, and Gary McLeod was coach at Columbia Hickman. Filbert was at Mexico High School at the time, and then later Missouri Western. And Bob Venata had coached at Central Methodist and won a couple of national titles at Southwest Missouri State, and had coached at the University of Missouri prior to Norm Stewart. They started the second camps in the state of Missouri. The first, Easy Ed McCauley in St. Louis.
Oh, yeah.
Basketball camps.
Yeah.
So I got to work those camps. I got to watch those guys run drills. And I was just soaking it in, because here's these three highly successful coaches running this camp, and I'm getting to listen to them. And even when I was became head coach at Northwest Missouri State, Richard Fairchild and Jerry Brown were two distinguished Hall of Fame high school coaches, one in Missouri, one in Iowa, and they worked our camps. I learned from them. I learned a lot from Lee Carricker. I learned a lot from Dan Longstreet. All assistant coaches I've had, I've learned from. But as far as somebody wanting to go into coaching, I would say that volunteer your time, offer to work basketball camps, get where you can get around other coaches where you can learn the game, and see if that's something you'd like to do.
That's great advice, really is. Well, the final thing I want to just visit briefly is, you told me you've written 90 stories and you're going to put this in a book. And I don't know if there's going to be more stories than that or not, but that's pretty impressive. 90 stories. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I'm not sure they're all print worthy, but at the end of my, of the 98-99 season, I was encouraged to write a book on the history of William Jewell basketball, which I did. Never got published because the publisher passed away and I got involved in other seasons. And I may eventually get back to that. But towards the end of my coaching career, being the veteran coach in the department, I would have some of the younger coaches come in, close the door. Coach, I need to talk to you about this problem I'm having with a player or with a team, or can you help me here with how I go about doing this with the athletic director or the president of the college, whatever. So I would share stories about my coaching career, about my life, that fit into whatever they were wanting an answer to. And then they start telling me I should write a book. And so when I retired, I thought about that. And with the encouragement of my wife, I started writing. I would just sit down at the computer and just write a story. And then I'd write another story. And then I kind of got serious about it. And one of my coaching friends is writing a book. He's working with publishers. One of her best friends from high school is writing a book, and she has helped edit those two books. And we've learned a lot. I talked to two people today giving me advice on the book, whether I should get a publisher or self-publish. You have given me a lot of good advice as well. And so I'm writing these stories. We're using something called ProWriter to try to make sure I'm dotting the I's, crossing the T's. My grammar's pretty good. Decent writer. My wife is much better. I'll write a story and then she'll make it much more interesting. So I want to give her credit for that for sure. But it's about my life. And most stories revolve around basketball.
Yeah.
I haven't told you this story, but on my mom's side, she had a sister who scored 102 points in a single game in the 20s. And her son got a full scholarship to the University of Missouri. He was the best player probably ever to play at Coffey High School in North Missouri. He was 6'4", an all-stater, and took him to the state tournament. And then I had another cousin from Coffey, my mom's another son of another of my mother's sisters. He held the single game scoring record at Northwest Missouri State in the 40s. He had scored 38 points in a single game. And then I had another cousin who played on Culver Stockton's national tournament team in the 40s at Municipal Auditorium, had one that played at Stephen F. Austin. So on that side of the family, there was a real basketball influence. But it's been an interesting life, and I've been blessed in so many ways. You grow up in a community of 175 people, and you don't lock your house. You don't lock your doors. And yep. A lot of people grew up like that.
Yeah.
I know I didn't realize how blessed I had it with my parents, with my classmates, and at that tiny high school where everybody did everything. You know, if you wanted to be in the, everybody had to be in the class play to have enough people to be in the class.
That's right.
Be on the basketball team, here's a uniform. You want to be on the track team, here's a uniform. You want to be in the choir, you could be in the choir, but you might be asked to sing very softly if you couldn't carry a tune. But and that's one of the reasons I like Jewel, because I could be in things other than just basketball. But basketball has dominated my life.
Yeah.
I've been blessed to meet people such as Joe Brickner in my life that have enhanced that experience for me.
Well, I tell you, this has been terrific, Larry. I really appreciate you coming on. I know that you'll tell your Jewel friends that these podcasts are going to be available. And for those people who do watch this, I'd ask you to subscribe to the podcasts or at least like them. You can make comments on them. My goal is to bring in leaders who can help influence others while also telling interesting stories about how they got to where they are. And Larry, you've just been outstanding. Outstanding individual, absolutely great career, good man. And I sure appreciate you taking the time to be with us. And good luck. I'm looking forward to your book.
Joe, it's been a pleasure. It's been an honor. And I love your book. Love what you're doing, encouraging young people to consider coaching. But thank you very much for this opportunity.
You're welcome. Thanks, Larry.
Thank you.